This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Thank you, Rav Felder, Mora Dasha. If Rav Felder explained why there's a need for a hypnotist, I've got to explain, I guess, why there's a need for a mood enhancer after I've talked. It's wonderful to be with you this evening on this Misha Nichnas Adar party. Initially, when I was asked to talk, Aliza said to me, you talk at the Purim party. I said, no, I'm going to actually be overseas for Purim. She said, no, it's on the 14th of February, and I know you're going to be here because you're giving a shiur that morning. And so the idea of a Purim party two weeks before Purim is novel and lovely and beautiful, because it really is machnis simche into the month of Adar, and so a wonderful opportunity, and once again wonderful to be with you. In the few minutes that we have together to learn some thoughts of Torah around Purim, I would like to look at some ideas that we can consider, reflect on between now and Purim, take with us into Purim, and perhaps use this opportunity, this year of Purim, to see things in different ways, to see the world and our relationship to the world in different ways, and to try and achieve that all in just a few minutes. I called the talk, you might have noticed, Allure and Discovery, because that's really the name of the Sefer that we read on Purim. Megillah means legalos, is discovery, to reveal. Esther is to hide, mysterious, Allure. And that tension, that paradox of Megillah and Esther, that which is revealed and that which is hidden, that which is discovered and that which is alluring, is core not only to Purim, but to Esther herself. The Gemara says in Chulin Esther Minatoru Minayin, where do we know the concept of Esther? Interestingly, the Gemara doesn't say where do we know the concept of Purim from in the Torah. Where is there a hint of Purim in the Torah? Where do we see the principles of Purim in Torah? The Gemara doesn't ask about Purim, it asks about Esther, it asks about Haman, and it asks about Mordechai. And it says Esther Minatoru Minayin. Where do we see Esther in the Torah? And the Gemara answers that the Ribbono Shel Olam says, Anochi Aster Hastiras Ponai. At that time I will hide my face. So we see in Esther, the very essence of Esther is Hester. The very essence of Esther is that mystery, that hiding that the Ribbono Shel Olam talks about when he says, Anochi Aster Hastir. There will be a time where I will hide my face. We see that quality in Esther, not only in her name, in her other name too. She's also called Hadassah. And the Hadass we know is a hidden branch. The leaves of the Hadass cover the branch completely. Very unusual among trees and bushes. The leaves cover the branch, and yet it has a beautiful fragrance. The Hadass allures you with its fragrance, but you can never get close to it. You can never see its essence. It's covered. There's Hester. Once again, the Megillah and Esther, there's something attractive, there's something alluring, there's something to be discovered. And at the same time, it's hidden, can't get close to it, can't understand it. Where do we see that with Esther? We see that with Esther in Loihi Gido Es Amov Es Moiladata. That all that time, she comes before Achashverosh, competing, so to say, with all these other beautiful women. She has no desire for the job, and therefore she makes no attempt to set herself up for it. And while they spend months and months, 12 months, they spend preparing themselves, covering themselves with oils and fragrances, preparing their clothing and making themselves beautiful. Once again, covering up the real woman. She does none of that. She presents herself as she really is. She asks for nothing. She comes before Achashverosh virtually without makeup, without beautiful clothing, without beautiful jewelry. She comes just as she is. Where's the Hester? What is she hiding? She's the one who's hiding nothing. And yet, Lohi Gido, she drives Achashverosh insane with allure and curiosity. Who is this woman? What makes her so different? What makes her so unique? And she never reveals her essence. Her essence is Amo the Moladata. Her essence is who she is as a Jewish woman. Her essence is who she is as a woman raised by Mordechai. That's who she really is. But Achashverosh can't get her. Achashverosh can't penetrate to who she really is. And he tries, he has these parties for her. And Chazal learned that a lot of that was in an attempt to get her to open up and to speak and to reveal who she is. But she's Esther. She won't reveal who she is at the core, because that's not for Achashverosh. That remains for Mordechai. And in that way, she remains faithful to Mordechai throughout that period, not revealing anything of her essence to Achashverosh. But that allure created by the hiding, by the Esther, creates an excruciating craving for discovery. That's the nature of hiding. That's the nature of Esther. And Achashverosh is plagued by this desire to get to know her, and that is the form of his constant attraction to her. And his willingness to do anything for her. To try and discover her, to try and find out who she is. The allure of the quintessential woman, Esther. And where does she get that from? It's Mordechai, who instructs her in the art of not telling, it's Amor, there's Moladato. Where does that come from? That comes from being Holech B'Darchei Hashem. That's emulating the Ribbono Shelam, Haster Astiris Ponai. Where the Ribbono Shelam says, I will use Esther. I will use that art of allure, that art of hiding. And you might say, but that's not so. When the Ribbono Shelam hides his face, it's not for allure. It's not a strategy. When the Ribbono Shelam hides his face, it's tragic. But perhaps it isn't really so. Perhaps the Ribbono Shelam hiding his face is also in order to create an excruciating desire for discovery. And if you look at today, today is a time of Hester Ponim. The Ribbono Shelam is not obvious. And science is consumed with the curiosity of what is it all about? What started it off? How did the world, was the world created? What was that first moment? Consumed with curiosity. Science won't let up and just say, well, we don't know what happened. Science starts after that moment. Who cares what happened before? Perhaps for the first time in history, we're absolutely consumed with a desire to uncover, to reveal the mysteries of creation. And it's Hester Ponim that creates that desire. When something's not hidden, we take it for granted. When something mysterious is hidden and is alluring, we experience an excruciating craving for discovery. And so Hester Ponim is not just a punishment. The emotion doesn't punish us with Hester Ponim. Hester Ponim is a reality that when the world is taking the Ribbono Shel Olam for granted and isn't relating to him as he needs to be related to, the Ribbono Shel Olam withdraws into hiding as Esther does. And we have to search for him and we have to seek him. But where does he hide? Molech Chol Horetz Kavoda, the whole world is full of Hashem. Ein Oid Milvado, there's nothing but Hashem. How can Hashem hide? Esther can hide. People can hide. What does Hashem hide behind? What protects him from revelation? Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv explains that we create illusions, and it's those illusions of reality that hide the Ribbono Shel Olam. We create them ourselves. And he gives examples of that. Paro. Paro believed that Moshe was going to save the Jewish people, and he set about to destroy Moshe. And for that he drowned all the Jewish male babies to make sure that the Mashiach Shel Yisrael, the person who was going to save Yisrael, would not survive. And what lands up happening? He prepares Moshe for the job. That's what happens. Despite all the effort, he lands up preparing Moshe for the job. He raises this Moshe in the palace, teaching him the principles of leadership. In a royal palace, where would Moshe have such an opportunity? The man plotting the demise of Moshe raises Moshe to Gedulah and Kovod. Sometimes we interfere with the Ribbono Shel Olam's plan. And the plan doesn't change. All that changes is what it does to us. We create our own histoponim. We create a place where the Ribbono Shel Olam hides behind, and we suffer the pain of that. We suffer the result of that. And ultimately, the total destruction of Mitzrayim. And Reb Simcha Zissel says the same with Haman. Haman plans the destruction of Vashti, advises Ahasuerus to kill Vashti, and in place, as a result of that, Esther comes. All the way through, he's plotting and scheming, and everything he plots turns on himself. History doesn't change, says Reb Simcha Zissel. There's nothing we can do to change the course of history. There's nothing we can do to change the Ribbono Shel Olam's master plan for the unfolding of reality. But sometimes we create realities of our own, we create illusions as if we're in control. And we're not in control. History is unfolding just the same. But our attempts to create those controls, our attempts to create that illusion that we're in control, come back to hurt us, damage us, cause us tsar, and sometimes death and destruction. And the Gemara says, Haman min ha-Torah minayin. Where do we know Haman from? What is the essence of Haman? Well, Reb Simcha Zissel just explained. The essence of Haman is an individual who believes that they can affect the future of history. And that the future of history is in their hands. Haman min ha-Torah minayin. Where do we see Haman for? When the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Adam and Chava, after they're embarrassed in the Gan Eden, Hamin ha'etz, did you eat from the tree that I told you not to eat from? Hamin ha'etz, Haman. That's where we see it from. What's the connection? Says Reb Simcha Zissel, because there too did Adam think that by eating from the tree, history was going to change? History didn't change. It would have unfolded the same. All that happened was he brought death into the world. But did Adam think that the Ribbono Shel Olam was going to deprive human beings of das, of wisdom? That unless he disobeyed the Ribbono Shel Olam to eat from the tree, there wouldn't be wisdom? There would be wisdom. We can't change the course of history. Nothing changed in history because Adam and Chava ate from the tree. All that changed is mankind was afflicted with the consequence of disobedience. That's what happened. And histoponim occurs when we create a reality that is not the Ribbono Shel Olam's reality. We create that. We hide God. He doesn't hide himself. But how are we meant to respond from that hiding? How are we meant to respond to that hiding? To uncover, to pursue, to reveal, to discover, and to bring the Ribbono Shel Olam out into the open again. And what is our role then? If we've just got to wait for history to unfold itself and there's nothing we can do to affect it one way or another, what is our role? Are we then simply to surrender to time and allow things to happen? We learned in the Sefer Chosh and Chabura this morning, Hazman Memela Koati. Time comes of its own, and everything that's going to be revealed and uncovered exists in potential at the very beginning. How when a baby is born, the baby has within it all the wisdom it's going to achieve later on. Sman Mamelakati, the child will grow older. Zeh Kotum Godol Yeye. Just leave the child and let the child develop, and the child will grow and develop and find his or her way. But sometimes we have to intervene. What's the nature of the intervention? We've got to be mechanech a child, we've got to educate a child. That's intervention. In the world too, we've got to make decisions. We go out to work, we do things, we act. We don't just sit waiting for time to uncover. What is the relationship between our obligation to act and our obligation to allow history to unfold? And that's answered by the opening phrase of the Mesilas Yeshurim. Yesoda Chasidus v'Shoresh HaAvoda, says the Mesilas Yeshurim, the essence of Chasidus and Avoda Atmimo, everybody should know what their chayv is in the world. What is a chayv? Chayv is a debt. Now if I owe you money, I have to pay you. But it's not for me to tell you how to spend the money. It's nothing to do with me. I don't even have to think about what you do with the money. You could gamble the money away, you could give the money away, you could invest the money. That's not of my concern. That's how we have to view our obligations in the world. We have things to do, but they're like repaying a debt. We've got to do them for the Rebbeinu, but we have no control over what He does with what we do. We do the mitzvahs because that's what we need to do. That's the way we express our gratitude to Hashem. That's the way we repay our indebtedness to Hashem. But it's His, not ours. What He does with it is His desire and His will. So do we have to be mechanech our children? Do we have to educate our children? Absolutely. Does that mean because of the way we educate them, they will come out good? No. We have no control over how they will come out. And you know as well as I do so many stories of the most wonderful people, some of them Gedolei Yisrael, who were raised in public schools in the United States. And you and I know many stories of people who were raised in yeshivas and Bas Yaakov who didn't come out that way. Does that mean we must send our children to public schools? No. We've got to do the best we can. That's our chayva. That's our duty, our indebtedness. But does that mean we can control the outcome? No, we can't control the outcome. It's not possible. I once asked Reb Meir Soloveitchik, the son of the Brisker Rav, what the secret is for success in raising children. And he said, come. He took me outside his apartment and he asked me to put my ear against the door of the neighbor. Very strange thing. Didn't I? That's all he told me to do. Listen to what's going on inside. I don't know how he knew. I suppose it goes on all the time. I listened and I heard the neighbors cursing each other. You can't imagine the language. And he took me back into his apartment and he said, and their children are Talmidei Chachomim in Ponovich. Go and figure it out. And then he says, it's tefillah, you've got to daven. Got to daven. There's no direct correlation. Don't assume because you send children to good schools, they'll come out good adults. Don't assume because we do the right things that good things will result. We don't know. All we know is what we have to do, what our duty is. It's a chayva. It's a duty, it's an obligation. And once we've done that, we've got to leave it to the Ribbono Shel. That's how we reveal the Ribbono Shel, understanding that the way the world unfolds is His doing, not ours. We don't hide Him away behind an illusional reality that we create. We allow the Ribbono Shel to emerge as the Ribbono Shel Olam, as He who is master of the world, and allows history and our lives to develop and to unfold in front of us as we go. And so it is with Purim. Purim's story took 9 years to unfold. We take 45 minutes to read about it in Shul on Purim. It's interesting that it's a Megillah. It's rolled up as a Megillah. A Megillah is mysterious. It's all rolled up. What's inside? But before we start reading it, the Shulchan Aruch says, there's Pan Rav Haigon, that we have to open it up like an Igeris. It's got to be opened up so that you can see. We open the story up. We open the mystery up. That's what it is. There's mystery and there's a desire to discover. And the Hester Ponim, we live in a time of Hester Ponim. The Ribbono Shel Olam is mysterious. He's not obvious. We don't see Him everywhere. But that shouldn't cause us disillusionment. On the contrary, that should cause us an excruciating craving to discover Him, to reveal Him, and to be Mekadesh Shmoy Barabim, to be a Kiddush Hashem in everything that we do.